This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
I've entitled my talk Recognising Success because I think it's absolutely crucial in the melee that we find ourselves in terms of cuts, more cuts, issues around the way in which teaching and learning is changing and developing. It's really important, I feel, to hold on to the success story that there is in UK higher education. That doesn't mean that I'm naive and it doesn't mean that I'm encouraging you to be naive. I've actually chosen Winston Churchill as somebody to... I rather like quotes, and I think actually it's very important when you talk about success also to remember that it's also about failure, because you get to success, in my experience and through many of my colleagues' experience, by risking things, trying things out, and failing, and you learn an awful lot through failure as well as through success, so it's not just a simple story. Just to show that I have a balanced approach to life, I've also chosen Woody Allen as one of my key quotes. 80% of success is just showing up. Now, you could have said that in the days when I was a student, that was really a bit true. I think increasingly, though, we live in a world where showing up actually means very different things. If you look at, and I hope you can see it, 50% of teenagers create content for the internet themselves. 62% of the content created by users under 21 is then generated by someone they know. 73% of students use the internet more than they use the library in their universities. And teenagers, and even some bigger people, spend on average 4 hours a day watching television, the web, SMS or whatever, engaging with the technology in some way or another. That actually means that Woody Allen's comment about just showing up is no longer true, because we show up in different ways. And consequently, we are learning in different ways, both as students and as those engaged in, if you like, more paid work environments. We engage very differently. I think that's very important in terms of the way we move ahead with teaching and learning. So if you look at the way in which universities constructed themselves some time ago, that smacks to me of tradition. I actually am not arguing we need to get rid of the tradition. What we need to do is marry the innovation, the new development, with the tradition and actually capture the best of both worlds. That's difficult. That's not easy for any of us. You may have noticed, you may have read in the press, that David Willetts gave his first speech as new Minister for Higher Education. I think it was last week at Birmingham University. And he talked about actually his grandfather being somebody who'd, I think, done the glazing of one of the big window at the end of the hall where he was giving his speech. But he referred to golf management. I mean, you'll all know about Mickey Mouse degrees. He referred to Mickey Mouse degrees. And I thought it was very interesting what he actually had to say. To me, the only Mickey Mouse degree is one that's mediocre, sloppy, lacking rigour and depth. Beyond that, I'm not going to judge what people study or what colleges and universities offer. Diverse provision of a high quality can only be a good thing. My aim is to make sure that students have all the information they need to make a well-informed decision about the value of a course. Now, I think that's absolutely right, but I also think it's only half the story. I think, fortunately, he went on to say, but that's by no means the whole story, and I would never make the mistake of presuming it was. For there's enormous value in further and higher education which just cannot be captured by utilitarian calculation, benefits which are not readily measured as patents registered or spin-outs floated. In the days when I went to university, I won't tell you when it was, but there was a lot more naivety, long hair and general sort of idealism around, or at least that's how it appeared to me. And actually, in those days, the value of an education was the really important thing. That's what I felt. I actually think it's really important nowadays as well. It's not just the cost of an education that's important to our students and to ourselves. It's the cost is important because you've got to pay for it, but the value is still there. And I actually found it very heartwarming that to hear David Willetts recognise that there are two sides to this story. It's very important, and it's good that he's recognised that. So I think to rephrase the old expression, never mind the width, feel the quality. I think the quality is important and it's recognised as such. And I hear what Aaron was saying about the geeks who get involved in QAA. I have to say I got involved in QAA because my department and my university was going through, first of all, subject review, then audit. And it was a poacher gamekeeper issue for me, but it taught me an awful lot about higher education because I got to go into other people's institutions. I got to understand what they were doing well and what they were doing badly. And actually, it was about sharing good practice and identifying not so good practice. And that's what we all do in teaching and learning environments. By the way, it just strikes me as very interesting that if this had been the 19th century, you wouldn't have had the technology, but you would still have been sitting out there in those serried rows. And so, you know, it doesn't change that much. Okay, I'm going to take you for a quick trip round the Higher Education Academy. At least that's what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to tell you about a number of our activities. So you'll have to forgive me because I'll talk very fast, but I'll always talk to you later if you need to have an exploration about things. Student learning experience is very important. And I've noticed that Paul, I think, one of my former colleagues, is up there in the audience. Well, Paul was responsible for leading us into identifying our vision. Our vision is for students in UK higher education to enjoy the highest quality learning experience in the world. No mean ambition. We've got UK higher education, which is very, very valuable in lots of ways, but there is always room for improvement. For me, the student learning experience is very, very different now from the days when I was a student. They no longer actually just read books in libraries. As we've seen, they don't actually always go into libraries. And when I was at Warwick, for example, and you'll find this in your own institutions, we now have things like what's called in Warwick the learning grid, learning spaces. People don't sit in serried ranks in quite the way they did when I was a student. And students now are much more active and involved in all sorts of ways, and that's all regarded as part of the learning and the student experience in general. Well, let's look at a bit of praising of the academics involved. The NUS Student Experience Report in 2008 actually noted that the most popular response from students when they asked what motivated them to learn was an inspirational lecturer. I'm sure if I actually did a sort of short question to all of you about, in your education, who had inspired you, you would probably think of an individual who'd actually had a huge impact on your own particular learning. Might not have been somebody at school or at college or at university, but there may well be somebody, more than one person, who's actually had an impact. And I think inspiration is very, very important. Certainly was important in my own life, both at school and at university. So students are positive about their lecturers, not always, but very positive by and large. And if we look at some of the outcomes, 75% of students enjoyed their experience at university, 85% rated their teaching and learning experience as good or excellent, and 57% were keen to be involved in shaping the curriculum and the content of what they studied. At the moment, and maybe Aaron's told you this already, only 23% of them actually felt that they were fully involved, and I think that's a crucial indicator for us in higher education. That, as Matthew was just saying, we do need, and we're a bit, you know, you talk about universities in the days when I went as ivory towers, we still are a bit defensive about the way in which we do engage with our students and encourage them to give their views and to be engaged in the development of the curriculum. I have to say that my experience, when I've discussed in my various roles, I was a head of a large department before I went to Warwick, for example, and actually students, just as you know, in general life, people who are experiencing whatever it is you're offering them, they actually have some very interesting things to say. So it's important that we do work with students and don't just dismiss them. I'm not saying you do. Right, this is the trip round Higher Education Academy. We've got three areas of our student. It's very integrated, but I've divided it up to try to make sense of some of it in terms of kind of identifying each of the elements. Student learning, I'm going to talk about the NSS, National Student Survey, and the way in which we engage and use that with colleagues in the sector. Postgraduate Taught Experience Survey, which is one of two postgraduate surveys that we run and which are very, very popular and, I would argue, very, very successful. They've not got there yet, but they are getting there very quickly. The student engagement project that we're operating, we're running with the NUS. And then I'm going to talk briefly about the UK Professional Standards Framework, which trips off the tongue, and reward and recognition in teaching and national teaching fellowships. Okay. So NSS, in the days when it began, 2005, it was rather regarded as an imposition, as a clunking activity that institutions were not happy to engage with necessarily. Nowadays, it's actually much, much more acceptable and accepted and even encouraged in institutions. I quite often speak to relatively senior colleagues in institutions, and they are very keen to use it as an enhancement tool. They are absolutely committed to it as a way of developing what they do, improving and enhancing what they do in institutions. Now, interestingly, it's used increasingly to look at disciplinary differences within disciplines. Why is it that that department in that institution is doing well and that department in that institution isn't doing so well on assessment and feedback, whereas the reverse is true, for example, around, you know, management and organisation or whatever? And that's actually a very, very interesting and important set of questions for subject communities. So there's growing use of NSS as an enhancement tool within disciplines, and the subject centres in the academy, for example, have been doing a lot of interesting work: economics, maths, art and design. I'm going to choose art and design very briefly just to give you an example. Art and design came bottom of the rankings, or very near the bottom of the rankings, in both assessment and feedback and organisation of and management, and have consistently seemed to kind of bump along the bottom in certain areas, in certain, particularly certain institutions, but overall as a subject. So they instituted a review with the support of the academy and with some of their subject sort of affiliated organisations. And this has led, the review was conducted by Mance York, this has led to the creation of a shared approach which is very strongly evidence-based. So Mance did a lot of analysis for them, and I think we actually have on our website, if you're interested, one of his presentations. Did an impressive amount of work with them and identified some very clear disciplinary and cross-institutional issues. And they now are targeting much more, both within institutions, disciplinary areas in specific institutions, and as a subject community, how they're going to handle these particular issues. And importantly, students are absolutely at the centre of it. They're engaging much more with their students. I mean, for example, students in many art and design faculties do not always recognise when they're being given feedback. If you wander around an art and design studio, students don't always see the relationship that they have with their tutor as actually one where the tutor is saying, well, you could do that, or you could... They don't see it as feedback. They see it as just a conversation. I mean, that's some of the feedback. So there will be disciplinary differences in terms of this particular subject you're looking at. But it's very important to be aware of those things so that colleagues can actually address those issues. Okay, postgraduate taught experience survey, PTES. We've also got one called PRES, Postgraduate Research Experience Survey. I'm going to talk only about the PTES survey. That's actually in its second year now, piloted in 2009 with 30 HEIs. We got 14,500 students in responding to the survey. This year, in its first full year, we've not finished the survey, and actually towards the end of May is when institutions have the option to ask their students to complete the survey at a point which is most suitable for their academic year, which is absolutely crucial, because you'll appreciate if you ask them at the wrong time, they just won't be around or they won't be interested. And so far we've got 28,000 plus students and 77 HEIs who are actively engaged. It's very strongly student-centred. It picks out the best in NSS, if you like. It's very enhancement-led. It's importantly in this day and age, and this isn't why we set it up in these terms, it's voluntary, cost-effective and flexible, and it's free to BOSS users. So I feel as if I'm doing an advertising job here, but if your institution isn't involved, then I would suggest you actively, and you need this kind of profile, I would suggest you actively get in touch with my colleagues. You'll find information on our website. The data, importantly, is confidential to institutions, and we set up benchmarking groups, and we don't share the information with third parties. And that helps to generate a community of trust between those institutions. We run a forum for those institutions, and it's a very lively forum. They come together, and we get a lot of evaluation out of that as the Higher Education Academy, but they get an awful lot out of it as well. And it's been very successful. We're hoping to build on that. Student engagement. I won't say a great deal about this, but you will see that we've been doing in working across the sector, both with institutions and with NUS, is identify what we've called the student engagement spectrum, which is important because we are focusing on specific areas, NUS is focusing on specific areas. And as an academy, we make contributions to the National Student Forum. We provide support for the Student Learning and Teaching Network, which derived from one of the settles or kettles. I was at a kettles conference last week, and I kept referring to it as settles and was told it was kettles. So I'm now neurotic about whether it's wrong or right. I was settled at one time on it, but sorry, didn't mean to give the pun. And our project with NUS is actually generating some good practice case studies, which will enable institutions, we hope, to actually incorporate, recognise the importance, and I know some of them do that already, of the student voice, both at strategic planning levels and actually in an operational sense as well. It's very important, not just, and I'm sure nobody does this in their own institutions, it's important not just to sort of be seen to be paying lip service to the issue. I think it's absolutely crucial that we do listen to the student voice. Okay, professional standards framework. One of my responsibilities at the Academy is the UK professional standards framework, and I actually don't have any sense, because I was so late, I didn't see who's here today, so I don't know whether anybody out there has any kind of involvement with the UK professional standards framework. But it's absolutely crucial, I'd argue, in the way in which we are going to be needing to move ahead in relation to teaching quality and the recognition of teaching quality, particularly as part of promotion, and I'll come to that in a moment, and I'm sure that other colleagues have actually spoken about that perhaps today. Perhaps Paul has said something about that. The UK Professional Standards Framework actually came out of the 2003 White Paper on Higher Education, and I've written there that it's increasingly mandatory. In a sense, mandatory you can either be mandatory or not, but what I mean by that is that institutions are increasingly acknowledging the need to have a requirement on their staff that they do undertake some professional development, either at initial or continuing professional development levels, in order to actually ask themselves about the quality of their own teaching, in order to identify what it is that they're doing effectively and build on that. I don't actually have a view that we have to go around identifying weakness and tell people that that's bad. My view is very much that we have to build on the strengths that people have, and there are strengths. I mean, even in the worst of situations, when I've observed people teaching, I used to teach in schools and colleges before higher education, and I have both given some dreadful lectures, and you may be experiencing one at this moment, but don't tell me. I've also observed some pretty awful practice, but actually, even within awful practice, there is often a kernel of effective behaviour waiting to get out, and that's what we need to find. So, at the moment, we've got 133 higher education institutions who are accredited by us. There's a positive view of the UK PSF, but one of the issues that we suffer from, I think, is that it's actually not very... I was going to use the word sexy, but it's not a very easy thing to communicate to institutions, and we are actually undertaking a review, not just of the way in which we express it to colleagues, but is it actually doing everything we need it to do? Are institutions really getting out of it what they need? And are we in a position where we can really effectively support teaching and learning in universities? Okay, reward and recognition, and I'll whiz through this quickly, and maybe Paul, I don't know whether Paul mentioned it, because he was involved in this research. This is the Genie Settle at Leicester University and the Academy's research project, and I'll zoom through it very quickly. I'm sure that both the reports are actually on our website if you're interested. 104 institutions surveyed. All 104 had research criteria in their promotions policies, but only 73 had teaching criteria, and only 46 could provide data about promotions which actually incorporated teaching as a component. And very few promotions to senior posts in research intensives actually incorporated teaching as part of the criteria for promotion. If you look at that research and promotion, if you look at the two colours, the green and the red, they're pretty well matched. In other words, research is important is the green line, research should be important is the pink line. So there's an acknowledgement that they are, in a sense, are in harmony. In terms of the survey, if you look at the teaching and promotion evidence, the top green, the lighter green, is teaching is important in promotion, not very important, in other words, at the moment, in terms of promotional policies and so on. And the pink line, and it's pretty parallel, whether you're a pre-92 and 1994 group or a Russell group institution, everybody was arguing that it should be important in promotion, and that's where we need to get to. It's not as important as it ought to be. National Teaching Fellowship Scheme, some of you may be National Teaching Fellows. Every year the Academy, on behalf of the sector, awards 50 National Teaching Fellowships. I came across this from Professor Sir David Watson, who used to be the Vice-Chancellor at Birmingham he used to be the Deputy Vice-Chancellor, I think, at Oxford Brookes, and then became the Vice-Chancellor at Brighton. He then went back to teaching at the Institute of Education, and he actually has articulated for me what's really important. He's immensely proud to be a National Teaching Fellow. I won't read the rest because he basically says being an effective teacher is absolutely crucial part of what makes an academic career. And I think I'm probably echoing what's been said by other colleagues. Okay, the last bit, and I think this echoes what's been said by other colleagues. I think colleagues were saying about the importance of getting back to the academic kernel, if you like, not just being concerned with consumerism. And I'd argue, and I'm in good company here because the Boyer Commission in the USA, when it wrote its report on reinventing higher undergraduate education, talked about universities as communities of learners, whether those learners are astrophysicists examining matters in the far reaches of space, the academics, or the freshmen new to an expanded universe of learning. The shared goals of investigation and discovery should bind together the disparate elements to create a sense of wholeness. And I think I have one more slide, or maybe two, one of which is Paul's. I mean, it's not Paul's slide, it's a quote from Paul Ramsden. There's abundant evidence about community of learners, the focus on working together with academics, students as active partners, and I'm sure I'm echoing what's been said before, and I didn't even know it was going to be said. And the very last one, learners and the learned. In a time of drastic change, it is the learners who inherit the future. The learned usually find themselves equipped to live in a world that no longer exists. Thank you very much.